Welcome to Romancing the Saints with Pastor Gene Pensiero. We're glad you're joining us as we study verse by verse through books of the Bible, discovering God's extravagant love for His people. Now we pick back up in Judges chapter 5, verses 1 through 31, in the second part of the study titled, I Had a Hammer and I Hammered in the Evening.
All the commentators say this is a very difficult verse to translate, and every translation I consulted gives a totally different slant on what is being said. The one that makes sense in context is from Young's literal translation of the Bible, and it reads like this: Then him who is left of the honorable ones, God caused to rule the people of Jehovah, and he caused me to rule among the mighty. In other words, after the battle was won, God restored honorable leaders to rule his people, and he continued to use Deborah, even though male leadership was reestablished. And so that's a simple, straightforward reading of it. And it ties in with what she just said about the villages and all that. So they defeated Commander Sisera and his armies. And in chapter 4, it said their victory continued to expand. And so little by little, village life was restored. Judges sat again in the gates. Men were restored to leadership. But God continued to use Deborah as well. She didn't go back to being a housewife at that time. She continued to be a prophetess and help out. In verse 14, from Ephraim were those whose roots were in Amalek. After you, Benjamin, with your peoples. From Machir, rulers came down. And from Zebulun, those who bear the recruiter's staff. And the princes of Issachar were with Deborah. As Issachar, so was Barak sent into the valley under his command. Among the divisions of Reuben, there were great resolves of heart. Now, chapter 4 specified that 10,000 men, exclusively from the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali, were involved in the battle. These two verses make it sound like troops from six other tribes joined them. And so, is this a contradiction, or how are we to understand this? Well, once again, a better translation will help sort this out. In the New International Version, these verses read like this. Some came from Ephraim, whose roots were in Amalek. Benjamin was with the people who followed you. From Machir, captains came down. From Zebulun, those who bear a commander's staff. The princes of Issachar were with Deborah. Yes, Issachar was with Barak, sent under his command into the valley. And so it appears that Deborah sings that these other tribes sent their leaders, not their troops. She calls them captains and commanders and princes. Remember in verse 9, I told you to hold a thought where she referred to them as rulers. And so it would appear that these leaders of the other tribes were summoned to observe the battle to be able to report back the victory to their tribes as a tool towards patriotic reuniting of Israel as one nation under God. Look at them as embedded leaders. You know how they embed reporters now with the troops that are out at war? You saw this a lot in the Gulf War and all of that. And so these guys are embedded leaders. God called them to come, not their troops, just the leaders, to go out and witness the battle or be a part of the battle so that they could go back and report what God had done to their own people. Four tribes are going to be singled out for not coming. Verse 16, why did you sit among the sheepfolds to hear pipings for the flocks? The divisions of Reuben have great searchings of heart. Gilead stayed beyond the Jordan, and why did Dan remain on ships? Asher continued at the seashore and stayed by his inlets. And so the leaders of the tribes of Reuben and Gilead, Dan and Asher, refused to come. The leaders of Reuben used an excuse that after great searching of heart, they simply couldn't leave their flocks. Gilead is a reference to the tribe of Gad. They settled outside the promised land. No reason is given. They just simply ignored the call. The leaders of Dan were busy trading and doing business, and the leaders of Asher were at Club Med. They were along the seashore and just thought they're going to hang out there. Now, it'd be good to look at each excuse and ask ourselves if we are saying no to the Lord for similar reasons or for any reason. This would be a good devotion for us personally to pursue. For example, the leaders of Reuben, they after great searching of heart, decided they couldn't leave their flocks. Well, the other leaders left their flocks, and of course it's possible to leave your flocks, but what you see here is this searching of heart. They convinced themselves that they gave it a real spiritual go. They really prayed about it. They really thought about it, and they just couldn't see their way to serve the Lord. But the problem is, this wasn't something to pray about. The call went out to come. The leaders were to come. Not to pray about coming, or it wasn't a volunteer situation. It wasn't, hey, if you'd like to come, if you don't have anything better to do, we're going to go out against the army of Sisera unarmed at the prophecy of God. Maybe if you've got a few minutes in the afternoon, you could squeeze that in. No, they were called to come, and they said, nah, we're going to pray about it, and it just doesn't work out for us. You know, I don't want to shock you, but there are things you don't need to pray about because you know that they're right. And a lot of times Christians will make excuses like that. They'll say, well, I'll pray about it. Well, maybe you will, but it doesn't matter if you will because you've already blown it because you should just be doing it. It's not something you need to pray about. So good devotions here for all of us to stay on track. Four tribes are not mentioned at all. Judah, Simeon, Manasseh, and Levi. We don't know why. We're not told, so let's not speculate. But that does bring us back to the troops who went out onto the field of battle in verse 18. Zebulun is a people who jeopardized their lives to the point of death. Naphtali also on the heights of the battlefield. Now, I found this interesting and a cause for us to pause for a minute. If the victory was certain and it was according to prophecy, then in what sense were these guys jeopardizing their lives to the point of death? Well, they were risking life and limb in the sense that the original prophecy said that God would deliver the enemy into their hand, but it did not specify there would be no danger. Sometimes we're delivered from trouble. Other times we're delivered through trouble. I am victorious when and if God heals me. I am victorious if God chooses to not heal me, because I will find ultimate healing. Better example, Hebrews chapter 11, the great hall of faith chapter, first part of it, bunch of heroes who did incredible things like Daniel thrown into the lion's den. It says he stopped the mouth of lions. Hungry, ravenous lions looked at him and said, we'll wait for some Persian meat tomorrow. They were Persian cats, get it? Ah, that's never funny, but I have to do it. It's something, it's part of the pastor's creed. Anyway, he stopped the mouths of lions, and he was miraculously saved. Later on in the chapter, you read about guys being cut in half. They believe that Isaiah, for example, was sawn in two. And so you think, well, wait a minute. How is that a victory? But it was. They were all just as victorious men and women of faith. It's just that God delivered some from their trouble and some through their trouble. And same thing with these guys. They're jeopardizing their life by obeying the Lord. It says in verse 19, then kings came and fought. Then the kings of Canaan fought in Tanakh by the waters of Megiddo. They took no spoils of silver. Kings, plural, indicates that other Canaanites joined Sisera against the Israelites, hoping to take spoil from them as in times past. The more you hear about this battle, the more hopeless it seemed for Israel. Not only did they face Sisera, his 900 chariots, and his infantry, but other people piled on as well and sent their armies, hoping to defeat Israel once and for all and take whatever they wanted. Verse 20, they fought from the heavens. The stars fell from their courses. The stars from their courses fought against Sisera. The torrent of Kishon swept them away. That ancient torrent, the torrent of Kishon. Oh, my soul, march on in strength. The heavens and the stars is Deborah's lyrical way of describing a freak thunderstorm. In other words, the deliverance came from the sky. Simultaneously, Kishon flooded and overflowed. I love that scene in the Fellowship of the Ring where the Nazgul attempt to cross the fords of Bruinen and they're swept away by a sudden supernatural torrent of water. It reads even better than it looks on screen, even though it's fantastic in the film. That's what happened to the armies of Sisera, at least a large portion of them. Then the horse's hooves pounded, the galloping of his steeds. Some of the chariots were swept away. Others were mired. Some retreated and were chased, it would seem, from chapter 4 by Israelites who acquired the weapons being left behind by the Canaanites in defeat and in retreat. These guys wanted to get out of there. As I said last week, they understood this was a divine intervention. They were throwing off their armor and laying down their weapons to be able to run a whole lot faster to get out of that place. The Israelites came behind them, picked up their weapons, and were just wiping them out. Verse 23, curse Meroz, said the angel of the Lord. Curse its inhabitants bitterly because they did not come to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the mighty. Meroz was a city in the territory of Naphtali. For unspecified reasons, the men there refused to go to battle. Of interest to us is that the angel of the Lord makes an appearance here. We saw in a previous study, this is an appearance of Jesus, the second person of the triune God, prior to his incarnation in the New Testament. The angel of the Lord is Jesus. And all of a sudden, he's involved in this battle. And so we don't know if he came on the scene and if that's what also discomfited the soldiers. I mean, when you see the captain of the Lord's host, the angel of the Lord and his power and glory, I mean, that's got to be disheartening to say the least. But it's interesting. And these were interesting times, were they not? They mentioned that the angel of the Lord was there as if it was commonplace. It'd be like us going out today to lunch at Figaro's and saying, oh yeah, that was cool when Jesus came in and you know, helped take the offering or whatever. Or when Pastor Gene sat down and let Jesus do the message. And people say, what? Yeah, Jesus was at church today. The angel of the Lord just shows up. And then you get to thinking, how dense are these people that the angel of the Lord seemed to be hanging out at Gibeon, and he showed up all the time in the book of Judges, and they still turned their back on God and went after the Canaanite religion. And then you realize it's no dumber than the things that we do today while Jesus is watching us. So very interesting to put ourselves in this story. Time to deliver the application. Deborah had been sitting under the palm tree, hearing legal matters, giving advice, interpreting the law. This had been going on for quite some time. She was already a prophetess before she received the prophecy to call upon Barak to lead Zebulun and Naphtali against Sisera. To oversimplify, we could say she was spiritual and that she was extremely busy serving the Lord in remarkable ways. If you were to give an evaluation of Deborah, I mean, it would be off the charts in terms of how God was using her and how she was sacrificing and how, you know, all of these things were going on around her. And yet, she indicates in her song, God came to her while she was doing all of that, and he shouted to her, awake, awake, Deborah, awake. She awoke in a way that stirred Barak to arise and others to rise up with him. I love our church family. For the last almost 30 years, has it been 30 years? How many years? 1985 to today is how much? Is it 32, yeah. For the past 32 years, you guys have been our family. And so I love our church. But we need to be ready to hear the Lord shout, awake, awake, and then rise up to new missions. We're a body of many members. We're a building of living stones. We're a household of servants. And just when we think we're doing great, and we are, we need to hear the Lord. A lot of times we think, when we read this in the New Testament, sometimes we think, well, when God says awake or arise, he's talking to a backslidden, sleeping believer who needs to get stirred up. But here we see that he can say this to a vibrant, excited church fellowship and say, hey, you're doing great, but there's some other things I need you to be doing. I need you to hear me. I need you to step out in faith. And so let's be looking for those things. Now, some missions, however, they are more solo in nature. And as we turn to JL, we're going to see that as a Christian, you're called upon to awake and arise yourself. In addition to G and PG and PG-13 and R and NC-17 and MA, which stands for mature audiences, the major content warnings you're going to see preceding cable programming are the following. AC for adult content, AL for adult language, GL for graphic violence, MV, mild violence, V for violence, GV, graphic language, I'm sorry. Graphic violence is GV. BN is brief nudity. N is nudity. SSC, strong sexual conduct. And R for rape. And so those are the kind of categories to tell you what to click off of when you're watching television. The finish of Deborah's song is definitely mature, with graphic violence touching on strong sexual content and rape. And so it's a very grisly kind of, in fact, the whole book is probably NC-17. And we don't pull any punches here at the end. And so verse 24, most blessed among women is Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. Blessed is she among women in tents. Now, we were introduced to this lady in chapter 4. Her husband Heber was the spy who told Sisera that Barak was advancing with an unarmed army of 10,000 men. If her husband had thrown in with the enemies of God, how is it she was blessed? Well, you're going to see in just a sec. He asked her for water. She gave milk. She brought out cream in a lordly bowl. When his troops were discomfited, Sisera managed to escape. He fled to the tent of Heber, his trusted spy, thinking he'd find sanctuary there. You might say that it was a sanctuary tent in that time. And so he found sanctuary there, he thought. Jael offered him a hiding place, and then she shows him more hospitality than he asked for to disarm him. He says, hey, I need a place to hide. Tell anybody looking for me I'm not here. I need some water. She says, I can do better than that. Here's a lordly bowl full of cream. I mean, just who doesn't like a bowl full of, some people say it was yogurt, but, you know, some of you are yogurt fans. I'm not a big yogurt fan, especially the kind of yogurt they were eating back then. Of course, you know, maybe it was better for you, even though they all died young. But anyway, whatever it was, milk, cream, yogurt, cheesecake, I don't know. It was something really just that would have him thinking, I am at home at Jael's. They're going to take care of me. And Jael offered him a hiding place. She showed him hospitality. She covered him up. And then after he drank, he fell into a deep sleep. In verse 26, she stretched her hand to the tent peg, her right hand to the workman's hammer. She pounded Sisera. She pierced his head. She split and struck through his temple. And I think there's you can almost hear her hammering his head. This is graphic violence. Multiple poundings of the peg, cracking of his skull, gray matter starting to ooze out. Now, I'm not trying to be overly gross. I mean, this is brutal. There's no way to sugarcoat it. You've been to how many of you have been on the world famous Jungle Cruise at Disneyland? Right? There's that one scene where you come upon the lion and lions and the zebra, and the captain of your boat says, oh, isn't that nice? Those lions are guarding that sleeping zebra. Well, yeah, no, they're not. They're trying to protect your kid from the horrors of the fact that they've just taken down that zebra and they're going to tear into it. And so that's sugarcoating. You don't get any of that here with Jael. You get the real thing. It gets worse. Verse 27. At her feet, he sank. He fell. He lay still. At her feet, he sank. He fell. Where he sank, he fell dead. He fell doesn't mean he was standing during the assault and then fell down. It's just a way of describing a soldier's death. He fell covers all manner of death, whether on your feet or lying down, awake or asleep. You say, hey, what happened to Sisera? You say, he fell. He fell in battle, or he fell after the battle. Sank adds to the graphic violence. As she pounded the peg, the ground beneath him was soft and his skull started to sink into it. So she had to hit him harder and harder to get the peg through because it was giving way beneath him. This is crazy violent stuff. Now, I don't have time to debate the ethics of Jael's choice. It was war. He was Hitler. It was hammer time. And she went for it. Now, the end of this song, surreal. Compared to the violence we just heard, you'd think this would be the climax. And then Deborah and Barak sing about Sisera's mother. So verse 28, the mother of Sisera looked through the window and cried out through the lattice, why is his chariot so long in coming? What tarries the clatter of his chariots? Her wisest ladies answered her. Yes, she answered herself. Are they not finding and dividing the spoil to every man a girl or two? For Sisera, plunder of dyed garments, plunder of garments embroidered and dyed, 2 pieces of dyed embroidery for the neck of the looter. Mothers make notoriously bad character witnesses for murderers. There's been a bunch of O.J. Simpson stuff back on TV the last couple of years, some specials and miniseries and stuff. And it reminded me of when I was watching the original trial and they had O.J.'s mother on the stand and talk about what a nice boy he was and how she helped him growing up and how he cared for her and all of that. And it was just completely wasted 20 or 30 minutes because that's her little boy. And so mothers, terrible witnesses. Mama Sisera was a worse witness because she seems to be a sociopath herself. At first, she comes across as normal, wondering as any mom would about her son's delay. It was unusual. His raids against unarmed men and helpless women usually didn't take that long. Her servants tried to placate her, and they agreed with her analysis. Her analysis reveals that she was anything but normal. She casually talks about her son as a plunderer and a looter. Hey, Mom, you understand those are crimes, don't you? I mean, that morning when she was giving him his breakfast, she said, "Honey, what are you going to do today?" "Mom, I'm going out to plunder and loot." "Oh, that sounds wonderful. Have a good day plundering. Plunder your heart out." I mean, these are terrible crimes. She had a thing for hand-embroidered expensive dyed garments, and her son would bring them home to her. "Honey, don't forget to bring me some spoil. You know how I love those things." Well, he'd get them from the women he sexually assaulted and whom his troops raped during the robberies, because that's what to every man a girl or two means. It's a kind way of saying that the Israelite women were being sexually assaulted and raped during these forays. And so verse 31, "Thus let all your enemies perish, O Lord, but let those who love him be like the sun when it comes out in full strength." Remember earlier when Deborah was called a mother in Israel? Her character is now contrasted with Sisera's mother to expose the awful wickedness of Canaanite culture and religion. One of the things it's saying is that you want to be like the Canaanites, this is the kind of mothers it produces, and these are their sons, sociopaths who produce psychopaths. That's where you're headed when you worship the gods of Canaan. As opposed to Deborah, whom God used in remarkable ways to deliver his people. So the land had rest 40 years. Deborah the musical had a 40-year run. The Song of Deborah topped the charts for four decades. Something here for us to notice is that Jael acted alone. She wasn't part of Israel. And while I say she was coming to her husband's aid by changing sides so he wouldn't be killed as collateral damage, she didn't consult her husband. This was just her hearing from the Lord, you might say. An opportunity to serve the God of Israel fell into her lap, almost literally, and she arose to the occasion. It was her personal wake-up call. I don't know what Jael expected was going to happen that day. Probably that Sisera and his armies would crush the Israelites. But when she heard what happened in the battle and when Sisera came to her tent, it was an opportunity for her to do something right, and she did it. You're part of the body, you're the building, you're the household of faith, but you are mostly out in the world on your own. Ask the Lord for opportunities to fall into your lap and then serve him. When one presents itself, rise to it. Don't be like those tribes who refused. Stand as one who is called upon to, if necessary, jeopardize your life to the death. That sounds harsh. Maybe if we hear Jesus say it, we'll understand what I mean. Jesus said, whoever desires to save his life will what? Lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. And so as a Christian, you know somewhere in your spirit that you're out there every day seeking to lose your life. You're jeopardizing your life on some level in order to serve the Lord. And you're happy to do it because he's the Lord who died for you and then rose from the dead. Deborah and Barak saying, when people willingly offer themselves. You know, that reminded me of Romans 12:1, where we are to present our bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. And so nothing is happening here that we don't do every day. Go out knowing that our life is to be a sacrifice and that we are to live sacrificially in order to be a tool in the Lord's hands. And so awake, arise, you might have to alter your plans, A-L-T-A-R.
Pastor Gene has been serving in the Central Valley of California at Calvary Hanford since 1985. You can find hundreds more Bible studies by visiting our website at calvaryhanford.com. There you'll find video, audio, and transcripts of sermons just like the one you just heard. You can also find links to get Pastor Gene's books at calvaryhanford.com/books. We hope you'll join us next time on Romancing the Saints as we continue to discover that you are the passion of Jesus.